Okay, we're live.
Hi, everybody. Welcome to the Heathen Hour. Today we have Craig Reed and Genetically Modified Skeptic, and they are going to be having a discussion about what gives life meaning and whether or not you need religion to have meaning in life. So first I'm going to allow both of you to introduce yourselves before we start the discussion, and I will start with you, Craig.
Okay. Hi, my name is Craig Reed. I am a apologist on Twitter. I started about 2 years ago. I have a YouTube channel called Christian Response, for lack of a better name. Sort of a makeshift, just kind of, I make videos as I go. It's sort of a little hole in the wall operation. I run out of my apartment. I live with my wife here in Malibu, California. And that's about all. If you know me from Twitter. I know a lot of the people who frequent these atheist hangouts. And so that's about it.
Awesome. And next we will go over to Genetically Modified Skeptic. Genetically Modified Skeptic, please feel free to introduce yourself to all the viewers.
Yeah, so I am Drew from GM Skeptic, Godless Cranium Superior, and
Amen.
But yeah, I make videos about atheism and sometimes alternative medicine. I would probably talk about alternative medicine a whole lot more. I really like talking about alternative medicine stuff, and I kind of want to talk about it a little bit more, but I've had a lot of atheist stuff that just kind of comes up, and I talk about it lately, but that's neither here nor there right now. Not really relevant, but yeah, I'm here to have a nice, fun conversation about some really deep stuff. And
I don't know if you're my superior, but you definitely are the king of shoutouts. Every time I turn on Twitter, somebody's like, look, here's this guy, look at him, look. Like, I don't understand, what do I have to do?
Are you talking about Hemant Mehta, basically?
Oh, what, Hemant Mehta, Cosmic Skeptic, I don't know, I saw another one.
Atheist earlier. Republic.
Atheist Republic.
Hemant Mehta, is that...
Drew's like, you forgot one.
Yeah.
Well, to be fair, well, actually, no, this sounds, I see it sound even more of like a dick saying this, but the reason why Atheist Republic shares me is because I know Ali Jackson, who's the CEO through Faithless Forum, but I don't know if that makes it sound any better or any worse that I say, well, they're not really sharing it because it's so great, they're sharing it because I know them.
Yeah,
which one's worse to say?
Yeah, well, it makes me feel a little better. It's a little soothing balm on my ego, so... I'm just joking. I wish you all the best. You know that. although I like to bug you.
Well, you're doing like really well with views anyway right now. Like you really seems like that YouTube is taking the collar off of you finally, and you're starting to really get up there.
It kind of goes up and down. Yeah, the whole YouTube thing, just, it's so weird to me because everything is just, there's no way of looking at your analytics and saying, okay, this is what I have to do, right? Like, even the, like I was saying on Twitter, even the monetization, like my last video at 3,000 views, it was green up until 3,000 views, and then it went yellow, and I was like, you know what, I'm not even going to bother appealing this one. I'm just going to let it go. And then the other day, it all of a sudden turned green, and it's still green right now, so I don't know what's going on. It's so weird to me.
That's funny.
Right. Well, you guys are way ahead of the curve in terms of where you're at as terms of channels. I think I get like 20 views at the most. If I post it in the little Christian hangout, I'll get like 20.
Well, it wasn't long ago where we were like that too, so don't give up. Just keep
definitely.
Going. Just keep doing your thing.
I remember getting I got my 10th subscriber, and I was like, oh my God. Like,
yeah, exactly. That's where I'm at. I think I have 25 or 20.
And that is just fine.
So, Craig, we'll let you go first. What do you think is the meaning of life or the purpose of life? I know you made a video about it, right?
You're going to let me go first?
I'm going to let you go first. We've heard enough of Drew. He talks way too much. We need more from you.
Well, okay, so how should I answer the question? Do you want me to answer it expansively to generate a conversation, or as a... I wasn't actually expecting to go first. The meaning of life.
Well, if I can interject here, you've seen my channel and everything, you know, you've seen some of my stuff. So if you were wanting to have a conversation with me about the purpose of life, I guess, where would you start? That's where I'd imagine, mm-hmm. you know?
Okay. So one of the things that I bring up a lot in my atheism, so let's start with that. One of the things I bring up a lot on my channel is And this is actually, I think, what started the conversation, because Godless Crane watched the video and said, hey, we could talk about this. If you're an atheist, you have a philosophical conundrum. Most of you who are atheists on Twitter don't recognize the conundrum because you live your life. But if you dig deep into atheism, you realize that atheism means that there is no intrinsic meaning to life. So I guess that's what we were going to discuss. If you are an atheist, your worldview says that you were put here, and you decide what it is you want to do, what's going to give you meaning in life. That could be potentially negating the entire purpose of an actual life. Like, if you take someone like, one of the things that I said was, that I always go back to as evidence for God, is somebody like Beethoven. To me, it's axiomatic. It's completely obvious that he was born with that specific purpose in mind. Or it's someone like Shakespeare. You look at him and his gifts, the gifts that he brought to the world and the plays that he wrote, and to me it looks completely obvious that he was designed with that purpose in mind. Now, obviously it's not completely obvious to you guys because you're atheists. But for me, personally, one of the reasons why it was so easy for me to become a Christian is that even when I was an agnostic and I was in my 20s, and I would dig into, I would dig into atheism texts, and I think I gave them a really fair hearing. I read a lot of Nietzsche, I read a lot of Camus, I read a lot of different atheist philosophers, and they always came up against the same problem. The problem being, if you have no intrinsic meaning to life, what motivates you past tomorrow? You know, that was one of the things that Camus wrestled with in the myth of Sisyphus, is what makes you get up in the morning if there is no intrinsic purpose to life? Now, he didn't really answer the question.
Coffee.
He said faith, right, exactly. But he said facing the absurdity of existence is with integrity. That's a lot of the deep answer they came up with. And that answer I didn't like, because it bothered me intellectually and I didn't think it was right. But so why it became so easy for me to become a Christian? Because ever since I can remember, I've had a really, really strong sense of personal destiny. That's the strongest. Even when I was agnostic, I still had a really strong sense of personal destiny. Now, that's irreconcilable with atheism. If you guys are correct, let's assume for argument's sake that you're right and there is no God, that means there is no such thing as a personal destiny. Which means if you think you're destined to do something in life, you're either not an atheist or you're mistaken. Is that enough of a start?
Sure.
To start talking? Or?
Sure.
Yeah, that's great.
What do you got to say to that there, GM?
Well, I guess a few things. I mean, I have a few questions just to kind of clarify. Because I really do want to go back to the Beethoven thing, because that really interested me.
Okay.
But one of the things is, I'll go ahead and say, and I know that the chat probably, I don't know if there's anybody saying about this yet, but, I mean, I'm sure you've seen from watching atheist videos and everything that when talking about atheism, you don't necessarily say, the atheist worldview necessitates that you think this or that or the other. I mean, because atheists still can be religious. I mean, Buddhists, a lot of the time, spiritual Buddhists think that they do have a divine purpose. There are certain religions that aren't necessarily theistic, so they're technically atheists, but they do think that they have a divine purpose. So the supernatural or divine destiny, it's not all rooted entirely in just the God question. And so I guess I would clarify, I think I understand where you're coming from. And would it be more accurate to say more of a materialist worldview or a naturalist worldview?
Well, okay, so what you said, what you said I 100% agree with. For example, before I was a Christian, I was a Taoist. Not really a Taoist, obviously, but I was reading the Tao and I was really, really into it. Now, you can be a Taoist and not necessarily believe there's a God. And what the Tao is sort of vague and mysterious. It's this big, indefinable something or other.
Mm-hmm.
But that's still a theistic sort of, you're still leaning into theism. I'm just talking straight, I guess, naturalism. I don't really want to pigeonhole you into a limited definition, but I'm talking if there's no God versus, or no, I mean, you're kind of in a third place. And this is part of the attraction of Eastern religions, is that they sort of give you both. You got no heaven, no hell, but you have a route of exploration that is both God and not God. But I wasn't... What I just presented doesn't really include that. I'm talking about like an atheist like Richard Dawkins. How Richard Dawkins avoids the question is he doesn't really look deep. No, there's nothing that necessitates. The only thing that you guys think that's for sure or is that you don't believe that there's a God. That doesn't necessarily necessitate that you don't have a personal meaning. I'm talking about if you dig deeper into the concept, nothing puts you here. You have no purpose in life. If you were put here randomly and nothing put you here to achieve a goal or end, there is no God that shaped you, then you live in a world that you don't need to do anything. You don't have any intrinsic purpose. Is that clear? Like no intrinsic meaning.
I think I understand where you're coming from. I just want to make sure that we have, you know, some terms clear just for probably more the chat's sake, because I think that we probably do understand each other. I just want to make sure everybody understands us. I mean, right. If you are an atheist, it means you don't believe in a God, but it also doesn't necessarily mean that you don't think anything put you here. Or you don't think that the supernatural, you know,
exactly.
It could mean that you think that the supernatural still exists. You could still be an atheist. I guess is my whole point. So I guess
is that true though? I mean, is that true? Because 100%. You guys both say that that's true.
Yeah, it's true.
So you can be an atheist and still think that there's
supernatural elements to. Yeah, I don't think anybody here in this room does, but it doesn't negate it. Absolutely not. You could be an atheist and not believe in a God creator, but still believe that there's supernatural elements in the world.
Or even
absolutely.
A soul. Yeah.
Or even a soul. Or even a soul. Yeah.
All that stuff.
I
just wanted to say that.
Explain that then.
Okay,
Because that's one sec, Craig.
So MadScientist72 gave a super chat, so thank you very much. He said, I have the ultimate argument for atheism. I am over 90% sure that consciousness is produced by the brain prior to surgery. General anesthetic causes a loss of consciousness by acting on the brain.
Yeah, but to explain that, you would have to argue that you need God in order to have supernatural elements, right? Is that so? All atheism is not believing in God. Mm-hmm. God and supernatural elements are separate concepts.
So what's producing the supernatural elements?
I don't think that. You're not going to get a good argument from me because I don't think there is anything.
Okay. I wasn't expecting. I wasn't expecting a third way. So skeptic. If what's the third way? How there's supernatural elements without a God? Because I don't see how it's possible. Go ahead.
That's like I made a video about. Whether or not there's a true interpretation of the Bible, and I don't necessarily think there's one specific true interpretation of the Bible, you know, in all the different literary forms, what's metaphorical, what's not, all these kinds of things, or I don't necessarily think that's knowable. So people always come back, and when I present someone else's argument, and I say, this is how my parents, or this is how, you know, my family, or my culture, or whatever, interprets this verse, or my church interpreted this verse, this is what they say, and people say, no, that's wrong, and you should change your mind about that, and I say, no, I'm not presenting my interpretation of the Bible. I'm presenting
somebody else's. Third parts, right.
So does that make sense? So I'm not trying to say that I think that it makes sense even that there'd be supernatural.
Oh, I gotcha.
That there are people that actually think that, and I happen to disagree with
if it's reconcilable. That's why I'm asking. Because I'd have to hear from them how that they like, okay, so the gist of what I was saying. If there is no being that puts you here, we don't have to call it God. If there were no designer for the universe, then there is no intrinsic meaning to your life. Now, originally, that's a liberating concept when that appeared in culture and society. You know, you had something like Sartre, existence precedes essence. So there's an element that people grabbed onto that, like, yeah, that's cool. There's no gods, there's no masters. But then if you look deeper into it, it also means there's nothing intrinsically, like, you weren't, There's nothing you can find. You don't, if you go off to find yourself, find what I was put here for, there's nothing to find. You just appeared here. There's no God that put you here. Do you see where I'm going with that?
Okay, I think I understand where you're coming from. I just wanted to get the initial bit out of the way. So, yeah, okay. I understand what you're saying, and I don't know if this will surprise you or not, but I think that essentially in my worldview, I don't think that there is some kind of intrinsic purpose.
I knew that. Okay, so you're honest with what your root of your philosophy entails. So let's just discuss it from there. I'm
fine with that. I don't think there's some kind of intrinsic or objective meaning necessarily to life. I mean, whether or not, you know, atheism, I guess, demands that, that's not really what I'm here to argue necessarily. But if we're talking about my
we
views,
don't have to argue at all. We can just explore it. That would actually be more productive. So, okay, go on.
So, I guess the thing is...
So what did you do? Did you answer it for yourself? Because, I mean, the obvious is, a lot of times someone will come back to me and say, A, that's liberating. Yes, there's no intrinsic meaning to life. I'm excited by that prospect. You know, that's a liberating idea. And I built my meaning for myself in things like my family, my home, my career, stuff like that. Is that kind of where you would go with that?
Well, I think that to explore the entire thing, I kind of wanted to ask you, because you said that you were agnostic at one point. So you said that you weren't really necessarily satisfied with philosophically, you know, thinking that there was no intrinsic purpose. Is that correct?
Yes. Okay. Well, how I describe it, and the reason why I never went full atheism, even though, you know, I was in a punk band and I was like, I was like Mr. Drugs and Alcohol, and I was totally on board if I thought it were true. And I dug into it as deeply as I think you could. I gave it a totally fair hearing. But what I started to rub up against with me personally was their answer in the deep place. You know, facing the meaninglessness, this is how philosophers answer. I'm not saying this is how you personally would answer, but this is how they did. Facing the meaninglessness of life with absolute integrity. And something inside of me went, no, that just ain't it. That just ain't right. There's no way that's correct. So, go ahead.
So, Craig, I just had one question for you. It's from the chat. So I think it's a great question. So, Anubis asked, could you ask him if he thinks dogs, cats, fruit flies, and so on have intrinsic meaning? And if not, then why must humans?
They don't. And it's not a question of must humans. I felt very strongly that I did. That's why I never became a full atheist. Atheism implies very strongly that you don't. So then we go up against someone like Beethoven. Does it really make sense that he wasn't created to be exactly what he was? Then you look at someone like Shakespeare. Does it really make sense? Or does it actually violate something in terms of your just a basic...
What would it violate?
And also, it's just a statistical probability that at some point in time, like of all the births in the world, that somebody is going to excel at any given thing, right? That's just a statistical probability.
I mean, I guess you could see it that way, but I never saw it that way. I saw it completely differently as like, yes, he was obviously put here for that reason.
Well, and you could argue that if Beethoven had been made slightly different, he might have been a better composer, right? Like, I don't know, maybe he, you know, his brain was wired a little faster or a little slower or something, right? So,
right.
I mean, it just happens that right, he was a great composer, but that doesn't mean that he couldn't have been a better composer, right? So, I don't understand your argument there.
It's not really an argument in the sense of, like, I'm trying to prove anything to you. It's kind of an argument in the sense of, like, to me, when I was digging in for myself personally, the thing that I would always come up against was my own personal sense of destiny and my own personal sense that I was actually, that was very strong in me prior to me becoming a Christian, prior to me anything. And I would come up against their answer for if there is no God, and it wasn't satisfying. in a really, really deep way, not satisfying. I don't mean like it wasn't satisfying at all. Does that make sense, what I just said?
Yeah, no, I can understand, you know, well, I'll let GC go ahead, but I can understand, you know, okay, why you would get to that and say that you weren't satisfied with it, you know. I can get that, and I think a lot of people have probably felt similarly, and yeah, I don't put you down for that necessarily. I just wonder whether or not that plays into a reliable epistemology or not.
Does it? It probably does not, but that was only the first thing. That was something that occurred to me, and then I started digging in, like, philosophically and looking for God on my own, still agnostic at this point. And that's when I started reading stuff like the Tao and the Bhagavad Gita, and then I started to become intellectually convinced that there was a God outside of any personal faith experience, intellectually convinced. Mm.
So that was more of a motivator than anything else, you'd say?
Yes.
Okay.
Because when you got to a deep place, let me see if I can say this so that it's clear. You get to someplace deep in yourself and you kind of know that's not correct. You kind of have a deep inner knowing that can't be right. So the best way I've described it in my video, and this isn't that good, but it's the best way thus far, is it violates something deep within you. You're kind of like, there's no way that's what life is about. Life is just not about that. Go ahead.
That kind of thinking violates me. Because it just seems like you're saying, well, I don't like the reality of it, and so I like this better, so therefore this must be true. And I don't mean that to be
I think it was deeper than that. No, I understand. I totally understand that you guys come up against that question completely differently. I'm just trying to tell you how I experienced it. Yeah, I guess you could say it like that.
Like, is that a fair representation of your argument? I mean, that's what I'm hearing when you're telling that story. I'm hearing, I don't like that there's no intrinsic meaning, which I don't understand why you would need intrinsic meaning to have meaning, right? But that aside, right, like you're saying, basically, I don't like that there is no intrinsic meaning, so therefore I feel like there should be meaning, so it must be true.
It's close, but it's not exactly how it went down internally. It was more like, this can't be true because it just deeply feels so much not the way things actually are. I don't know if that was a better explanation, but that was more like, if you knew somebody really, really well, say your wife, and you're really, really, really close to your wife, and then you come up against some evidence that she's completely other than what you thought, and you examine the evidence and you dig into it like I did, okay? Staying up late, drinking, reading atheist texts, and you're examining the evidence with what you think is full commitment. So you're going, no, my wife is actually scum. She's different how I've always perceived her. And then you something just because your heart is, I don't know, your heart is established, and you're like, wait a minute, I actually know this person. It can't be. It can't be. I know her too well. She's good. And then you find out that the evidence that appeared false was misleading. Does that make sense? It's a better way of describing it.
Well, if I found out my wife... If I found evidence that my wife was not a good person, like, and it was conclusive evidence, like, I don't know, maybe she gets...
Right, but it's not conclusive evidence. It's kind of like what we're talking about. This is what makes these conversations interesting. Mm-hmm. There's not conclusive evidence one way or the other. You guys have evidence for your worldview, correct? I mean, you're not just making crap up as you go. You talk to each other about different things, and you obviously, when it comes to, you know, some of the negativity that you've experienced from religion, you have tons of evidence.
Okay, so I have a couple of super chats, so I just wanted to read them real quick here. Mad Scientist, thank you very much, says we can all talk ourselves in circles here, but if consciousness is produced by the brain, then there is no soul, no afterlife, and no final judgment. That's all I have to say. Brian Stell says, how is personal destiny different from personal motivation or drive?
And what up, Brian?
And Jay Reese, or I hope I'm saying that last name right, is feeling a reliable way of knowing.
So that was feeling is one way of knowing for sure. Okay, feeling is not reliable. Feeling is absolutely points you in the direction of something tangible and real. Yes, absolutely. That's what your emotions are for. Got you it. Get angry. Okay.
I don't think that's necessarily what your emotions are for, though. Your emotions aren't a way of, you know, discerning truth.
Can you give an example, Craig, of when...
Let me think of that, because actually, what she just said, I think I'm totally don't agree with. Emotions point you in the direction of something more deeply true that you might not notice any other way. If you, let's say, you take a job, something just doesn't feel right. Something just doesn't feel right. Everyone's nice to you. Something just doesn't feel right about this place. Your emotions are trying to tell you something. Now, obviously, you need to back it up with other evidence or you're just a crackpot. But your emotions are trying to point you in the direction of health and safety. That's what they're there for. You get angry because someone's threatening. You get happy. Oh, this person's beneficial. So your emotions are actually trying to guide you towards truth. That's what they're doing.
But okay, I have to interject here for a second, Craig, because you have to look at the mechanism that brings forth emotions. So like in your scenario, when you said, you know, you're thinking about a job, for example, the emotion that you get, like the dissonant sort of like uncomfortable emotion that you get is a result of processing external cues. So we're essentially pattern seeking machines, right? So even on a subconscious level, when you go into that environment, you may have seen things that in the past, like through cause and effect, have led to detrimental outcomes, and you recognize those patterns, and that's what elicits those emotions. So the pattern seeking is eliciting the emotion to get to kind of, I guess, tell you that, oh, I've seen this before. Now that could be right or it could be wrong, and it can also
emotions can deceive you,
right.
So your emotions can deceive
you. How can they be a way of guiding truth? I think that's just another form of pattern recognition.
Well, but that's what they're pattern recognitions that are trying to produce safety. You touch the hot stove.
Perhaps, yeah. Like, I guess they...
Then you do need to back... I guess what the next step in the atheist will say is you need to back it up with some solid evidence that is reliable. So that but your emotions can be the first guiding point. Don't touch the hot stove. Why? Last time it hurt. So your emotions are trying to guide you to a place of benevolence and safe harbor, correct?
But not necessarily. Well, that's learning, right? That's learning. Like, emotions are attached to everything. We very rarely do anything that doesn't have some sort of emotion attached to it, because we experience emotions, like, on a day-to-day basis as we're going through life. So this is where the pattern recognition kind of comes into play, because we recognize that when I was in this scenario, these things happened, and I felt this type of emotion, right? Like, happy, sad, whatever. So when we see those things later, they elicit those emotions again because we start to affiliate them with one another on a conscious level, right? So that's just learning, and then we're connecting that emotion to it. So the emotion isn't guiding really anything. Let me ask you a question.
In a healthy individual, what they call emotional well-being, or what do they call it? Emotional intelligence. They said that's one of the biggest cues of success. If you're emotionally intelligent, you know how to govern your emotions. Your emotions are helping to produce stability, peace, sanity. Your emotions are helping you decide between right and wrong, good, safe, dangerous. Your emotions in a healthy person are actually really in service of, you know, even on an evolutionary level, in service of producing a much better life, a much more successful quality life.
But a high level of emotional intelligence just indicates that you're able of recognizing, controlling, and mitigating your emotions.
That's something I was going to bring up, because that's something that I studied in school too. And emotional intelligence really has a little bit less to do about just being able to control your emotions, and more of being able to understand their influences, and also having usually a high level of very like a kind of an accurate sense of empathy, if that makes sense. Like, your empathy is usually pretty spot on. Like, one of the ways that people do emotional intelligence tests is to actually show them faces of people and then ask them what emotion they are, like they're expressing in that. And that's kind of an emotional intelligence test. It's not necessarily following them over a period of a few years and seeing whether they govern their emotions or not. So it's not necessarily whether or not you're using your emotions to make decisions that,
that they're saying. Okay, so then I was talking about something differently. What I was talking about, I didn't read the book, to be perfectly honest, but there was a few years back, there was emotional intelligence is the greatest sign of success. I just latched onto the phrase because in the simplest way possible, what you said is correct. What do you say about what she says? Can emotions help you discern truth? That's the original, what Shannon started saying. I think they're guideposts. Go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say, Terrence Clark said emotion points you to survival, usually not truth. Like, I think what you're saying, like, if...
Well, there'd be both. What he just said is that both those are two complementary ideas. If you're wrong, you're not going to survive. So it's got to be true, or your emotions are... If your emotions deceive you, you're in trouble. And if you look at dysfunctional people, that's the nature of their dysfunction, is their emotions lie to them, and usually it lies to them because of something that happened deep that they're responding to from their past. Like their father was really angry, so they respond to a situation a certain way in the present that bears no relationship to reality. I've seen that in my own life, for example.
Okay.
When my father would get mad, go ahead.
I was just going to say, I just wanted to find out from GM, what sorts of things would you consider your meaning and purpose in life? Like if from an atheistic point of view? Because it seems like Craig wants... Craig basically says, you know, you need God, right, to have some kind of purpose or meaning. So what would be yours?
Yeah, so I say that we don't have an objective sense of meaning or purpose necessarily. I think that the nature of purpose is it's a result of a mind. And it's actually kind of funny. I think of it that way because you could actually think of it, oh, you know, well, purpose is the result of the mind of God or the divine logos or something. But I think that purpose is a creation of the human mind in order to serve utility for basically our survival and for our productivity. That being said, it's also something that aids a bit in happiness. And I think that it's ultimately always, really in any worldview, the creation of a mind. And I don't really understand why it can't necessarily be the creation of my own, the creation of my societies, my families, my cultures, and still actually be of value to me. Just because my life is finite, it's not being assigned to me by someone else, or it's not something that exists if I don't exist. I kind of think of it like beauty a little bit. I will never stop finding something. Like I wouldn't ever stop finding my wife beautiful unless I didn't exist. But if I didn't exist, I wouldn't be around to find her beautiful. The sense of beauty that's being experienced is contingent. It's just based on me entirely. And I think of my life's purpose as being the same thing. And I can understand from a Christian perspective why that would feel off or phony, especially because
how you just describe things is essentially correct, but some of the things that you say you found meaning in, if my worldview is correct and there's a God, they were given to you. They were your family, they were gifts of God to you. And
it sounds like just one thing first, Dark Scott said, sounds like Jordan Peterson's Darwinian's truth. I think that's at you.
Yeah, I'll sound like Jordan Peterson. I'll take it. I'll
sound like Jordan. That's I think fine. That's actually a joke at GM, maybe. I'm not sure. But it sounds like...
Yeah, I released a Jordan Peterson video yesterday, so...
Yeah.
Did you really?
Yeah, I did.
It's good, yeah. I think that... it sounds to me, though, like, Craig, that your meaning for life is one thing, right? Like, God gave this to you. And GM has multiple... avenues towards meaning and purpose. Would that be fair of me to say to both of you?
If I can cite actually C.S. Lewis here, and this will probably be a little bit rough because I'm not exactly sure about the wording, but theism, especially when it comes to purpose here, it seems it's a monarchical view of reality or of purpose, and whereas mine is a democratic view. So, right, there are multiple things contributing versus there is just one thing controlling.
Mm-hmm. Well, I wouldn't say controlling because you have choice in the matter, but correct. Well, your worldview, that's what I said originally. That's why the concept strikes people originally is very liberating. There is no intrinsic meaning to my life, which means I can create value out of what I choose to put value into. It's only when you start digging past that that there's a level where it can become potentially horrifying. Obviously, you guys aren't horrified by it because you're totally cool with where you're at. I'm just saying on a deeper level, it would horrify a lot of people. That was the original point of my video. Well, I'm not necessarily saying...
Even if it did horrify me, though, and I thought that that's the truth, then I would still follow that to its conclusion, right? Like, something being horrifying to me doesn't mean it's true or not true. But Brian Stiles said, if something is given to you, it's not intrinsic. So, and you said, like, well, we have a choice. Well, if it's given to you by this creator, God, right, then what choice did you have in what it gave you?
Well, you have a choice in how much you give your life over to it and how much you receive of a preordained will for your life. One thing I want to say, GC, what you just said was right on. What'd you say? Yes, just because it's horrifying doesn't mean it's not true. I totally agree with you. If you guys are right, the old part of the reason I was saying in the video too. Really? That's how it works?
It's over?
Dang. I thought I was doing well. I just got iced just like that. Just got shut out. Wow. Okay.
See, this is why we don't listen to GC. I'm having a good time. I think we're doing well. We're doing well, Craig.
Yeah, no, this is fun actually.
I'm enjoying it.
Okay, So, GC, one of the things that I wanted to point out in the video, and I didn't do a good job. That video is not very good, by the way. This discussion is going better. You need to answer that. If you guys are atheists, right, and you want to build an atheist community, you can't just say that question isn't real. You have to answer it to the satisfaction of people who can't bite. Because if you're right, there's a horrifying existential reality that's going to strike a lot of people as horrifying. The way they're going to solve it is not going to look too deeply. That's how Richard Dawkins solves it. But if you can see the potential problem, then in terms of how that can be answered satisfactorily, philosophically or existentially, does that make sense what I just asked?
I think I know what you're getting at. I actually find this a really interesting question, and it's something I think it's a very legitimate question about building society. I mean, am I getting the right impression that you feel like that question hasn't been taken seriously?
Yes, absolutely. 100%. What you guys are doing that most atheists won't do, what you guys are doing is you're taking the questions for real and grappling with it for real, instead of just trying to stop me from observing this and say you're wrong for observing this, because it points to a really potential problem for like future people in who you would want to win over to your cause. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I think I actually agree that it is something that you do want to address, because I don't think that it is very wise to base a society on some form of ignorance. You know, and I think that's probably something that we would agree about. I mean, am I correct
totally
on that?
Yes,
yeah. 100%. So it is totally valuable to explore. And I guess that's why both of us are actually here, you know? So I guess the first thing I just wanted to ask and clarify. So you say when people go a little bit deeper, then they find kind of a horrifying existential reality.
Correct.
Are you saying that we have or have not, just us in this chat right now, have or have not actually looked at that, like stared that frightening image in the face?
I don't know. I don't know you guys well enough, so I can't answer that.
Okay.
My guess is with you personally, probably. GC, okay, well, man.
Oh, yeah, probably not.
GC, no way.
The problem.
No way.
Yeah. But no, I appreciate that. I take that as a compliment too. But
well, I just a sense I get from how you're talking about it that I think that you did. It's just me personally. But go ahead.
Well, I do my best. We'll see. You know, maybe you'll have a different opinion. Maybe you'll have the same opinion as we, you know, become friends and everything. So we'll see. But So I guess that my question here is there any way to determine whether or not a society that is largely atheistic would look that in the face and then become maybe dangerously or suicidally nihilistic? Is there any way that would actually happen?
There's not a way to determine that will actually happen, but that's one of the biggest, that's Jordan Peterson's whole cause. That's his whole point. That you're abandoning a metaphysical substrate that was necessary, according to him. Now, you obviously don't think it's necessary, so tell me why it's not.
Well, is there any kind
and
of...
Obviously, it's a bigger question than... I'm not expecting you to, like, blow me away right now, but...
Well, right.
You know,
yeah,
let's start discussing.
But, so is there... Could we look at any kind of historical precedent to determine whether or not a more atheistic or non-religious or non-theistic society would
be satisfactorily dangerous? That's what we got with Holy Kool-Aid, because he kept trying to pretend that Norway was beamed in from outer space. It was like, you know, it's like it didn't come out of Christian tradition. I don't know. I don't think so, but you tell me. Maybe.
Well, so for the sake of the chat, I think it's important to explain that, because I actually just watched that today just to kind of prepare and see where, you know, I want to make sure I am understanding you correctly, so I got a refresher on that. But do you want to kind of explain what Thomas's point there was and what your objection to that was?
I don't really want to go back into his argument, but his point was that there are atheists or secular cultures nowadays that are better than, you know, that are improving in all these areas. It's debatable, but the point I was trying to make as a counter argument is those cultures weren't beamed down from outer space where people studied Richard Dawkins every single day for the last 2,000 years. They were produced out of Christian Western tradition, and to deny that Christianity was a huge part of that Western tradition is to just deny the obvious. So you can't really empirically decide what in Norway is produced by the new secular mindset and what of it is still remnants of the Christian tradition. So I don't think it can be answered that way. But you've thought about it. So my guess is you don't think it would produce nihilism in a culture if everybody were on an atheist page, correct?
Well, my main question with that is, it's kind of a different question when talking about the discussion you guys had when talking about the usefulness of religion and having cultural ties to all of that. And I understand your point, where you're coming from with that. But with this, would you say that I'm just playing with your terms here, the cultural basis in, say, somewhere like Norway that's more than 50% atheist, essentially, but is also very happy and successful, and people lead good lives there. So would you say that because they have a Christian foundation, that's why they feel like they have enough purpose to live a happy life?
No, I have no idea. My only point was that they're too new in the game in terms of, we're not talking about a 700-year-old tradition, we're talking about a 50-year-old. And so it's impossible to determine what things are still remnants of, not even necessarily Christian tradition, what things are coming from what. At root, you understand the question well. If you're going to strip away God, you need to rebuild something. What is it that you're going to rebuild that can replace so that people don't feel completely existentially lost in the world? Religion gives a lot of people meaning. And if you take it away, you have to replace it, correct?
Well, what is there in Christianity that we would have to replace? Like, what is there... What beneficial aspect is in religion, in your religion in this case, in Christianity? And chat, tell me if my volume's up. They were complaining that my volume is low. I turned it up. But what in there would be needing to be replaced that we can't replace or we haven't already replaced?
Well, in terms of this discussion, we're talking about the intrinsic meaning to life. How do you replace that? With Christianity, it's easily solved. I look for, I pray, and I look for God's will for my life, and I try to find, you know, I try to find exactly what it was that I was designed and purposed to be. If you're going to say that that's a fantasy, okay, some people may get on board with you, but then you may put those people at sea. You need to give them some other deeply satisfying thing. Does this make sense, what I'm saying, or no?
I think I understand where you're coming from. It's a question of existential security, right?
Okay, yes.
Yeah, so I have a couple of questions. Was your claim earlier that if we had a society that didn't necessarily base its hope or didn't have an intrinsic hope or intrinsic purpose or meaning, that it would devolve into something nihilistic or potentially dangerous?
That's not necessarily my claim. That's Nietzsche's claim. That's Peterson's claim. That's a lot of different people have brought that up. That's a claim that needs to be addressed. I'm not presenting it to you like you personally need to answer it. I'm just presenting it to you like, talk about it.
Well, okay, so you don't personally make that claim then?
I don't know. I'm not as dogmatic as a lot of people who get in debates with. I don't really know. It's a claim that needs to be thought out and talked about and taken seriously.
Well, if I can go ahead and say, I try to take every single opportunity when my interlocutor says that they don't know or they're going to have to reassess that or something. Kudos to you, because that is the way to not be just painfully and dangerously dogmatic, is to be able to be okay with saying, you know, I really don't know, and I'm not going to pretend that I do, even though I'm trying to figure it out. So kudos to you for that.
But there's kudos right back to you, because if you were being aggressively waiting for me to say something wrong, I wouldn't say it.
Just leave that to me. Just leave that.
Yeah, exactly.
But Apologia said,
terrible cop, good cop, terrible cop, good cop, cop that kills, like, the black guy immediately.
I'm going to say it's good cop, bad cop, cute cop. Obviously, I'm the cute cop.
Apologia, though. Apologia says in the chat, he kind of concisely said what I was trying to get at is, why is intrinsic value better than self-determined value? Because you're saying, well, the intrinsic value can't be replaced. Well, why is that any better than just self-determined value?
Well, self-determined value is something that self-determined value, you need a whole bunch of personal qualities to build. It might not be better, but you can't just throw it out there for sheeple. Okay, here's your liberation. You now have to construct your meaning for yourself. Those people are going to fall apart in response, potentially. Because self-determined value, you have to have strength. You have to have a lot of qualities intrinsic to you in order to do it for yourself. You guys are coming from a much higher place than potential congregants, you know?
I think there's something important in what you said there, though. Like when you said, here's your liberation. That means, you know, it's kind of being taken away from someone. I don't think it's as abrupt as that. Like, nobody just wakes up in the morning and it's like, well, you know what? I heard an argument, now that's it. I've decided. Like, it's a gradual process.
Deconversion.
Right, exactly. Yes. So deconversion out of a religion isn't something that, you know, you just snap your fingers and it happens. And nobody's arguing that religion should be taken away from anybody. We're just stating that, you know, you can, if you do wake up in the morning, your life isn't otherwise different unless something is being inflicted upon you, just because you no longer believe in a God. So does that mean that you had meaning when you went to sleep and you didn't have meaning when you woke up?
Pass.
Sorry, Craig.
It's all right. I pass. I don't know.
No, I respect that. That's fair. It's not an easy question.
Skeptic, what do you say? I mean, she's your girl. What do you say? I don't know. It's
Paul,
again,
Paul might have something to say about that, yeah?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, man. Okay, so you want me to answer?
I don't know.
Question?
Did Paul? So let's ask Paul, because I watched some of his deconversion, or at least I think it was, with what's that guy's name? Ken or something? Something. Who's on some channel?
Ken Ham.
Probably Ken Ham.
Was there I don't know for a fact that there would have been a crisis of meaning when you. I think he was evangelizing at one point. He was going around the country evangelizing. I would imagine that there would be some sort of crisis of meaning if you say, okay, I no longer believe in Christianity. I no longer buy this anymore. This ain't working for me. Fine. But wasn't there a point where you struggled?
I can answer that. I wasn't as devout. I don't think I was as devout as Paul Lejia, but I believed in it. But I think most theists have other underlying...
meningitis?
Well, I think we all have other underlying things, right? Like, I mean, Christianity wasn't the only thing that gave my life meaning, right? Like, it was there's a whole bunch of other things underneath it. Like, I'm sure it's the same with you, right? I still had, like, other reasons to be moral and to be ethical and to do all of those things. I didn't need, if you took that one piece out of the puzzle, it didn't mean that the whole thing just fell apart. That's why I don't know what in many ways it made it easier because you were no longer trying to attain the impossible and stuff, right? You could just accept.
Well, what were you exactly?
I was Presbyterian and then later Baptist.
Okay, and how hardcore were you? I get the sense not totally like sold out. Like Paul was really hardcore, from what I understood in the thing.
Yeah,
like he was.
I think he was more hardcore than I was for sure. But I definitely believed. Like I grew up in the church. My parents were elders in the church, so I used to clean the church. I mean, so it was just something that I accepted because it was what I was taught, right? Like it was just the kind of thing until I got older I started to think about it, right? Terrence Clark said theists define meaning for themselves too, so I just wanted to say that. Thanks. So yeah, so I don't understand why.
Well, potentially, but well, the intrinsic value is again. There's a lot of when we talk, we're talking in the world that we actually inhabit, where there's a lot of different pieces of the things in place. You're in a culture, your culture is a certain way. I'm trying to strip it down to its root, to its absolute essence question, because that's the only place where it's horrifying. It's really easy to ignore outside of the root of the question. But if you take it back to like Camus, the whole point of the book was why not kill yourself, basically, Myth of Sisyphus. The whole point. Wrestling with the meaninglessness that I now have found at life. Like what Shannon said, originally it was a liberating experience. And I get that for someone like Paul, that there was a lot of baggage tied up to that particular type of Christianity that would have been probably way better off chucking to the curb.
But imagine... But imagine if Paul had been raised in a family that didn't, like, say he never grew up with the Jesus myth, right? And he instead was taught that there was, other values that you could hold. And so
I didn't grow up with the Jesus myth. That's my point. I was raised nominally Christian. Nobody expected me to become to believe. I was taken to church on Christmas and Easter. My mother was a feminist. And, you know, she'd storm out of churches when they would talk about abortion. Nobody really expected me to believe any... I was through the motions a little bit, but nobody expected me to take them seriously.
Right, but you're saying...
So I picked it up from the culture at large, a sense of personal destiny, where there's still a whole bunch... Yes, it's chaotic and vague, but there's still a huge God idea governing everything in our general society.
Well, I guess what I'm trying to get at
is... You guys haven't made that much inroads.
So, like, say there was, like, the meaning thing or this God thing, right? Like, I'm thinking of it more like a crutch, right? So, from birth, you're given this crutch, right? You're told to believe in this, and this crutch will help you walk, right? And then religious people say, well, what, you're going to take that crutch away, and then they're going to fall on their face. But... And really, you're taking the crutch. But really, you're taking when the crutch goes away, they find that they can still walk. Right? They didn't need the crutch all along. They were just given this crutch from birth and told that they needed it.
Well, right? Okay. you're assuming that it's a crutch, but what if it's that? What if you're taking away their actual destiny? What if you're taking away the truth? What if you're taking away, you know, people are born for a purpose with a specific thing that said, I mean,
can I interject with like one thing? Sorry to interrupt. I'm just trying to find a good spot to come in. So this seems almost like a perceptual argument though, right? Because if God is giving us meaning, like if he is, you know, denoting meaning upon us, right? Whether we believe in him or not, that should be an intrinsic part of us. So us choosing if we're going to or not going to believe in him shouldn't change that unless he's going to take away that meaning if we choose to not believe in him. So that, and so essentially what we're arguing here is what our perception is, if our perception changes as when we decide to or not to believe in God and what that means. So either way you look at it, believing or not believing in God doesn't have any value claim on what your meaning is. It's your perception that gives us that determination, well, right?
Kind of. You hit on something really importantly true. Let's take Keith Richards. And this is actually biblically true, believe it or not. The gifts of God are without repentance, which means God gives you gifts to use in life, whether you worship him or not. Now, nobody would say that Keith Richards was like a good like Christian man. But to me, it's pretty obvious that he was born to do what he did, that was intrinsic meaning to his life. If he had not played the guitar, he would have been violating, there's that word again, violating something really deep and sacred and wrong if he had decided to do something entirely different with his life. To me, it's so obvious that there's a holy purpose there, even though he didn't use it necessarily to be Christian. To me, it's, and you can define God in a vague way with this. You don't have to, like, that's what I mean. We're born in a culture where there's a lot of vague God ideas, and personal destiny is one of them.
So you're saying whether or not you have a perception of God is what gives you meaning then. It sounds like that's what you're saying. Like, if I believe in God, then I believe there is intrinsic meaning. And since I believe that there is intrinsic meaning, then there is.
No, I'm trying to have a conversation with you guys.
I just love that Zero. 100%. I just love that Zero gave a super chat that said cash money is the true meaning of life, and he gave $6.66.
Yeah, and if I can interject really quick here.
Go ahead. Oh, no! Oh, my God! So awesome!
I just had my... Sorry, you get to hear my old, crappy, hasn't-been-given-new-strings in, like, 2 years Strat here that I have sitting next to me at every video.
Oh, so. Strat, no less. Rock, I'm so impressed. I am so totally impressed. And he even played Satisfaction.
Yeah, no, that's the only Stones riff I know by heart. So, like, I just have to do that.
Wow, that's hilarious. Do you play actually for real?
Yeah. No, you said you were in a punk band, and I was like, hell yeah! I've been in a few punk bands actually. So
awesome. What were the names?
One was called the VX. One was called Skidmarks. That was a hardcore band, which was in college and it was hilarious. And yes, it is a poop joke. Yes. Another one, it was called Uke Can Do It, and it was a uke punk band. I wrote like two albums for that. Yeah, that's a little embarrassing, albums. But I also... And then another one was called Sitz Pinkler.
Oh, cool.
But yeah, so I won't get us too off track. I just wanted to say that, but yeah.
Awesome.
So anyway, if I can... Someone just said, is GM still there? But I've been kind of formulating a question. I do kind of agree with Shannon. We're talking about kind of a perceptual argument. But I guess my question to you with this so far would be, how do you know that when someone digs deep enough and they really ask that existential question and they think that there is no intrinsic meaning to life, how do you know that that will be terrifying for the majority of people?
Because that's what they say. I'm going on the stuff that I actually read where they actually did it, and the answers that they came up with were, face the existential terror of life with integrity, face the meaninglessness of life with honesty and integrity. And I was like, well, that's just not going to cut it.
So these philosophical books then, is that what you're referencing?
Yes. But that's okay. But that's a normal question for a lot of people. If you pass the liberating point, I mean, most of you, there's so much to say. Also the thing with what Shannon said, okay, I'm softening my views on this to discuss it. I 100% believe that there's an intrinsic meaning to life and that it's absolutely in your best interest and it's totally worth everything inside of you to find it out. And if you don't do it, I think that's a terrible shame. I'm not talking like that because that's not a conversation that I would be having with atheists. I'm watering down my own personal beliefs to discuss it more philosophically and generally. Does that make sense?
Oh, yeah, totally understood. I get you.
I think Keith Richards was 100% born to do what he did, and Beethoven too. And to me, it's as plain as day. And if you don't follow through on what you were born to do, I think that's a total waste. It's a total shame. But you can be following through on it in a way without like, you guys are all in you're not, you know, taking drugs and like doing stupid things. You're actually doing intelligent things and using the gifts that you've been given. You're just not necessarily using them at this particular stage.
What are you talking about? I'm high right now. What are you talking about?
That explains so much.
So what are you talking about? I'm high right now.
Oh, you're high now, yeah.
See, the thing about Jesse is, you think that he's a normal guy, but he's a degenerate so much that when you think he's acting normal, it's because he's on uppers and downers at the same time.
I'm not sure I had the perception that he was a normal guy, but I'll take the word. I'll tell you what, okay.
Oh, this is why we get along.
You're never coming on the show again, Greg.
Oh, man. Come on our channels whenever you want.
Look at the backstabbing happening right now.
I know. Poke the hornet's nest. Now they're all like, it's rebellion. They're mutiny. They're gonna take over your channel. Have you be a guest star on your own videos.
That would be awesome. Less work for me. But we've got an hour, do you guys have any closing statements that you would like to give?
Awesome conversation. Do I go first? Who goes first?
Yeah, you can go first.
You can go ahead.
Awesome conversation. It's exactly what I was hoping was going to happen. Totally, I thought, really, really interesting and philosophical and I hope entertaining, but you know, I'm not really sure if we care. Do we care? It was good. It was actually really, really everything that I hoped it would be. And I could have this conversation for 2 more hours and I'd be cool.
Oh, yeah. If I can jump in, I agree. And, you know, to anybody who's in here and especially, you know, seeing the chat, who's like mostly atheists because they're GC's fans, Shannon's fans, you know, I'm sure that there are people that probably don't necessarily agree with us and are more on your side, Craig. And to those people, I want to say that if you are wanting to get into this discourse, and I think that Craig sets a pretty good example for you in his tone and in his approach, you know, and there we agree there are people who can be dicks and not give you the chance to speak. So I'm glad that we were able to have a meeting of the minds that was fun and productive. And at the end of the day, I think that Craig and I probably really agree on please ask the questions and dig into it as deeply as you can and earnestly try 100%. To figure out what the truth is. It seems that both of us have tried to do that and we've come to different conclusions. I don't know, maybe we'll both be at the same conclusion one day on Craig's side or my side, I don't know. Or maybe we'll stay here, but regardless, I think both of us would probably have a message of keep digging further and don't be an asshole while you do it.
Amen. 100%. 100%. Awesome. Keep digging and investigate honestly. Investigate honestly.
Well, that was nice talking. Don't be a dick. Exactly. It was definitely nice talking to both of you. We'll have to have you on again, both of you. Thanks a lot, chat, for the super chats and for joining us.
And yeah, and I guess Steve McRae is having an after-show discussion for anybody who isn't done discussing these things. So yeah. You're welcome to go
over. Yeah, jump on over there.
They can lampoon me for being too nice.
Yes.
You were too nice again? Wow,
yeah.
Man.
We get why weren't you yelling? Like, well, because, you know.
I was yelling. I yelled a couple times.
Did right, I yell? Like you then. Don't like you. You didn't yell enough. I'm sure none of us did.
Yeah.
Good night, guys.
Paul already said in the chat that I was too nice.
He doesn't know you.
Good night, guys. Go check out Steve McRae's channel.